are these things that we're thinking about? I mean, where is the arena where compliance and enforcement interacts with people
in that instance, their pets?
You
would just run the address and see from the address if you wouldn't have to go on the property. Because the address would be in the system. And
there are a number of approaches to build compliance.
So an urban service officer would run an address, and then what happens? Okay, the address shows there's no pet license there. What?
Well, then they violated the ordinance. I'm assuming we'd mail them a violation. And I mean, I have a slightly different view than some about the enforcement section. I have brought up the idea that's, you know, raised some hackles, but I also approach this from the point of view, if this was easy to address, it would have been addressed by somebody other than Ted and I. I have a view that that if you take your dog into the vet and it's not licensed, that you must have your dog licensed at the time you take your animal in.
I agree.
And that has raised the hackles of the veterinarian community for a variety of reasons, all of which I'm happy
to... Is that contained in this?
It's not, but it would be the next stage. That we're asking you to authorize us by accepting this port to go to the next stage of the kind of system we'd implement. So having had the Bureau of Licenses for a while, I have an appreciation of people's ability to skirt licensing requirements, and so
that's why I'm sort of raising this is what I see as
so my discussion point I would push is probably more than just a voluntary program trying to get people to step up, although I think that might be important, but also some firmer steps that would require registration. Understanding you would have to have offsets for a sliding scale for people's income and that kind of thing, all that taken into account. But generally speaking, I don't think a vet in Portland should be allowed to treat an animal that's not licensed.
And so on the same line, would an urban service officer say if somebody's walking their dog down the street to approach? I guess I don't know if you have the answers to these questions.
You'd have the citizen lay on their face, like arms extended, until you could ascertain whether the dog was licensed or not.
The concept,
it's easy to joke about, but if the underpinning reliance on compliance and enforcement is how everything's going to be paid for, I think you got to treat these issues.
Well, you do
seriously,
but you would do like
you're
I did.
You're outlining a progression of enforcement that may be way beyond where the citizens, the vets, are willing to go, and that's probably why we're not there yet.
I'm
just trying to ask some honest questions here that I think I have, and I don't know if those have been answered yet or will be answered.
I can just add that the task force looked at really a comprehensive way of building compliance, and it's an entire system where you deal with education and valuing and incentives, and then also there has to be at the other end of that continuum, there has to be some kind of consequence, and the ways in which we move through this, I think the task force is envisioning that if we really make a case and sell the value for this, people will be doing it. They will be registering their pets because they'll see the value and the benefit. But there still needs to be at the other end of that a consequence. Our officers today are enforcing the ordinance every day in Portland. Leash laws, licensing laws, potentially dangerous dog laws.
And to what extent do getting the microchips implanted support efforts to get people to license because they're not worried if their pet gets lost because they figure the microchip's going to save them? Is there any kind of contradictory?
There's not. It's a second layer of protection for the pet and for the pet owner, because what you have is you can have a license, but the dog or cat, it loses it. But if it's microchipped, all the shelters in the region are scanning for microchips. It's another insurance of getting your pet back. And so as we sell it as one of those benefits and connect it somehow to the registration system, what we're doing is ensuring that more animals can get back to their owners. And the more we do that, fewer enter into the shelter, and it becomes a much more effective program.
And then finally, just my own personal experience, we are an aging population, so our dogs are getting old, and cats too. I have a dog who I believe who's been one of the 14% that's been registered, but licensed. But the most recent notice, you require a proof of rabies vaccination,
yes.
And my veterinarian doesn't want my dog to have a rabies vaccination at his age. So
there's an exemption that the veterinarian can offer
for that.
Yes, for health reasons on vaccination, and that satisfies the licensing law. So there's a lot of mechanisms built into the system that it can work for various incentives, but also it's a number of humane issues that are built into it. So there, again, we want to reduce the barriers that exist out there for people to license.
Okay. Thomas, do you have a contribution to make to the discussion of licensing and compliance?
Absolutely, Mayor. Thank you. I'm Thomas Lanham. I'm the Operations Division Manager of the Revenue Bureau. Commissioner Saltzman, you're asking exactly the sorts of questions that that I've been asking over the course of the last year. I think really the problem is that Animal Services core mission is to serve animals and is to serve that public interest. And unfortunately, they don't have the resources and they haven't really been focused on the collection end of the process. And that's sort of where the Revenue Bureau comes in. I don't think I need to remind you that we've been very successful over the last few years in dramatically increasing compliance rates for business licenses. And in terms of the problem that really we see before us today, it's a matter of discovery. If an animal doesn't enter the system, if an animal doesn't, for example, currently get vaccinated, dogs are now required, if they're vaccinated, to the vets will report that to animal control. But if that owner doesn't vaccinate the pet, and I think you'd be surprised at the large percentages of owners that don't do that for a variety of reasons, they don't enter the system. And so I've had conversations with folks at the Water Bureau, specifically in the meter reader shop, to potentially have our Water Bureau meter readers enter a simple code into their handheld device whenever they come upon a property that appears to have a dog owner. And so it's those kind of a return to the older 1970s model, frankly, where there was a census conducted. Folks would go door to door, knock. You either hear a dog barking or you have an owner that comes to the door and there's no dog barking, and maybe you leave a hanger. I mean, some of these things are really common sense approaches. Another approach is, frankly, to dramatically increase the follow-up in the collection process. As of a few years ago, the process was to essentially send a postcard or two, and if no further response came from you, then I think there was a presumption that maybe the dog had died or you were no longer in the jurisdiction. I don't know all the mechanisms of that. What we do for business licenses, if you fail to register, correction, if you fail to file on April 15th, we'll make a presumption that you're choosing not to file. And so we may choose, and I'm saying may because the implementation team needs to address a wide range of these issues, we would make a presumption that your pet is still alive, that you're still there, that you're simply choosing not to comply. It's certainly not our intent to come at this from a big brother perspective, and I know that my colleagues on the task force had a lot of concerns with some of the language that I used early on around compliance. But the fact of the matter is that there will always be a significant fraction of the population that, for whatever reason, chooses not to pay. And these aren't people that lack ability to pay. These are people that simply are unwilling to pay and have had a free lunch for too long. And so I think that's where the Revenue Bureau comes in, and we've identified some other approaches: amnesty, sliding scale for ability to pay, potentially discount for multiple owners so you're not penalizing people that are adopting multiple animals from a shelter and dinging them at a flat fee for each head. There's a whole bunch of issues that we need to discuss underneath.
You know, I was thinking about your suggestion that we enlist the Water Bureau employees in doing some informal census. Well, I think there's another potential reservoir of people you could tap, and that's the candidates. Because I think all of us who do canvassing have had some experience with less than friendly animals, either within the chain link area we're trying to get through or when we knock on the door. I think we might be able to code our lists and be helpful to the cause as well.
But you can understand from my perspective why I'm proud to tell you that I hired Thomas into that job that he's in right now because of his approach, and he's who I'm thinking of, and his approach to these issues would help design the efforts to make sure pets are licensed. And yes, voluntary compliance would be pursued, but absent that, they would meet Thomas.
Okay. So one... unless there's more discussion from council, I think I would ask the committee to really do further thinking about benefits of having getting your animal registered and the benefits of it to finding a lost pet, and much more of a web-based sort of approach, so that Folks can post online, they can look online, and if you're registered with a photo or you have characteristic descriptions to be able to sort, I think there are some nascent sort of for-profit stuff out there. You might not even have to build it yourself, but I think a lot of folks would, as part of registration benefit, loved to be able, you know, the prospect of losing their pet and being able to find it more quickly, I think, is something that they would pay for. Any other conversation with this panel?
I just wanted to add, I think, another important benefit, which I think Sue kind of touched upon, and I'm not sure what's in the report, but the ability for first responders, 911 call takers, if there's ability to have a house flagged for pets at 911.
We spoke about that specifically.
I think that would be a real benefit to the people would like.
Chair? If I could just add one more thing. This is obviously a joint resolution in accepting the task force recommendations and moving on to the next steps to talk about funding and specific strategies, some of the issues Commissioner Saltzman and others have raised. Commissioner Leonard will be joining me this Thursday, I believe,
tomorrow,
to make the same recommendations to the Multnomah County Board of Commissioners. So we're seeing this as a joint resolution and a joint acceptance of the task force recommendations. And before Commissioner Fish jumps in, I just want to point out that by accepting the task force recommendations, we're not necessarily committing to all of the recommendations of the task force. What we're doing is acknowledging the hard work that these citizens have put in for the last year and making a commitment that we will continue to work for going forward to implement those recommendations.
And specifically, I think we're by the resolution coming back in June with a plan that we're directing the staff, if you all vote to accept this and the county commission tomorrow votes to accept it, to develop a plan that would take into account all of the issues raised here, take these issues and come back to us with the plan then that you would then consider.
Right. And so we see this as an important milepost.
And although it says pet registration, you're just talking about dogs and cats, right?
No, the report says everything.
No, I think other things.
Chickens, too?
Chickens and pot-bellied pigs.
Perhaps. No, just dogs and cats are the primary target that we're looking at for.
Well, I do want to hear some testimony, but I just want to clarify what you just said, that we're not committing to the funding at this point, or are we?
I cannot, on behalf of the Board of County Commissioners, commit to any funding here and now. We are in the process of putting together our budget. To be perfectly transparent, it's going to be a very challenged budget. Having said that, there are a number of recommendations in this task force report that are operational, cultural, and some would leverage existing opportunities that exist right now in the community. So, again, it's my recommendation that you do accept the task force report and we get to the business of implementing what we can in the order that we can do it.
And all you're committing to is directing the staff to develop a detailed plan of how we would implement the recommendations that you would vote on later.
Sorry. Any final words, Commissioner Leonard?
Thank you, Chair Wheeler, very much. And,
thank you, Commissioner.
Mike, appreciate very much your work, too.
So we have no one signed up to testify. Is there anyone, though, that has been involved with this process that violently objects to anything that has been said thus far and feels the need to rebut? Or is there any issue that has not been discussed that you want to raise? I just have an eye on the clock there, so I'm trying to facilitate our forward motion on this. All right, if there's no one else in the room, because we have no one signed up, if there's no one else in the room that wishes to testify, and there's no further council discussion. Carla, will you please call the roll?
Fritz? This is excellent work. Thank you, Commissioner Leonard, that we have had several calls to our office about animal-related issues, and so I know it's, I appreciate knowing that this work has gone on. Thank you very much to all the citizens and staff who've been involved in this. It's a fine report. I found it very interesting, and I look forward to the ongoing work on it. Aye.
Fish?
Commissioner Leonard, I want to single you out for your leadership on this. We've come to expect reports that you are shepherding through council like this to be of a very high quality. Appreciate the work and leadership that you've shown. Appreciate the collaboration with Chair Wheeler. You know, there's a lot of services that people in Portland receive where they don't really know whether the county or the city provides it, but they need the service. And I especially appreciate that during these tough economic times, you're taking the lead in looking at ways we can collaborate and get things done in different ways. We can have the debate someday or again about whether we're going to go back to city-county consolidation. But without consolidation, we can certainly date better. We can do coordination better. And this, I think, is an example of where we work best together, looking at a shared problem. And I want to congratulate you for your leadership. I was going to remind Chair Wheeler, but the mayor was giving me the dirty eye that we didn't want to consume any more time. But I wanted to remind him that we gave him a lot of courtesy and respect today. So when you and I present tomorrow at the county, we expect the same reciprocity.
Nice.
And I also want to thank the task force members for all their hard work on this. This is really an excellent product, and it's been a very constructive discussion. I'm pleased to accept the report and vote aye.
Saltzman?
Well, I want to thank Commissioner Leonard and Chair Wheeler for spearheading this effort and all the task force members. I think there's some approaches that need to be, a lot of issues that need to be thought out, but I think overall the thrust is in the right direction, and pleased to support this. Aye.
Leonard?
And I would be remiss not to acknowledge the hard work of Sue and the task force. This is a subject not unlike when one goes somewhere to have a discussion about religion or abortion, and I don't say that lightly. There's usually not people that are ambivalent on the subject of animals. They are driven to become quite emotional and even in some cases beyond emotional on this subject, and the task force faced all of that in working through this, and I got a lot of emails, the full range of what I just described coming through the emails, and so I am just personally committed to not allow this to be one more identification of what the problems are in Portland and Multnomah County to be shelved, and you have my commitment that for whatever it's worth, I will not rest until these recommendations are implemented. And I realize that it's probably one of the most thankless tasks people can do to try to figure out how to get people to pay taxes that they don't want to pay, to do the kinds of things we're going to need to do to address a lot of the concerns Commissioner Saltzman raised. But I'm just committed to making that happen. I'm also committed, Mike, to making sure you work out of a more respectful place, not only for the animals but yourself. And then I've thought in terms of bonds, I've thought in terms of levies, and there's nothing that I'm dismissing as out of hand to address the issue of creating a place that is it reflects the values of our community that we have as a shelter. I can't put it any better than that. And both of those things I am personally committed to making sure happen. So I appreciate all the work everybody's done. It has been very trying to do what you've done, and now we're going to go to this phase, and hopefully all of you will keep in touch to make sure we do it right, and then see you back here in June when we come up with our recommendations. Thank you. Aye.
Adams.
Commissioner Leonard, great job. Chair Wheeler, thanks for the great partnership. To the committee and staff, thank you. This is really the Bureau of Revenue's day, isn't it? Lots of hard work coming forward. Appreciate it.
They need a proclamation.
We'll do a proclamation. All right. That gets us to item number why don't we do the items that were pulled from consent? So item 120 first.
120, authorize an intergovernmental agreement with the Oregon Department of Transportation to receive a $499,600 grant from the Safe Routes to School program for design, engineering, and construction of bicycle and pedestrian safety improvements at 11 Portland Public Elementary Schools.
I needed to pull this from the consent agenda for a technical change to delete and insert the proper wording in at the request of the state of Oregon. So it's a technical change and would entertain a motion.
So move.
Right. It's been moved and seconded. Can you call the vote on the technical
change? Can you tell me what the wording change is?
Can you call the roll on the
motion? Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. If you could call, unless there is anyone that wishes to testify on this issue or further council discussion. What?
I don't think you get to testify after we voted.
That was on the amendment.
Oh,
now
right,
voting
sorry.
On the main motion. All right, no one wants to testify. There's no council discussion. Can you please call the roll?
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
A
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Sorry to keep you waiting, Rich. All right. We also then had item number 130.
130. Authorize a contract and provide payment for construction of the wet weather screening facility at the Columbia Boulevard Wastewater Treatment Plant, project number E05512.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, this is a authorizing Bureau of Environmental Services to go to bid to expand the capacity of the Columbia Boulevard Treatment Plant, which is really the treatment plant for sewage in Portland, to expand its capacity by 150 million gallons a day in order to accommodate the east side big pipe and all the other complements of the combined sewage overflow project that are coming online. This has been reviewed by DEQ and approved. The money is budgeted in BES to pay for this, so this is authorizing us to go to bid on it. We estimate the cost to be about $9.4 million.
And?
So I had a question. Okay. I had other questions, but given the late hour, I'll hold on them. I was wondering, what is a wet weather screening facility?
I was afraid you were going to ask me that.
You got me to answer.
Well, wet weather generally means dealing with stormwater, you know, storm events where it rains. I believe this has, I think it's a, the vernacular really applies to major expansion of the Columbia Boulevard treatment plant. I can't actually tell you exactly what the screening aspect means.
Okay. We tried to find out from staff.
We have somebody who can.
We do? Oh, good.
Yeah. Oh.
Okay.
I'm the engineer on that project.
Please have a seat and give us your first and last name.
Morning, Mayor Adams. Good morning, commissioners. My name is Vu Han, and I'm one of the engineers in the Bureau of Environmental Services. You had a question about what's a wet weather screening facility. It is a facility with mechanical screens to remove floatables and big solids out of the wastewater stream before it gets down to the primary and secondary treatment processes at the wastewater treatment plant.
So it's like a big sieve?
It is big steel screens,
right?
It's, 7 feet by 10 feet, and there are four of these to be installed.
Thank you.
And wet weather, was I right about explaining what wet weather means? It means?
Extreme storm events.
Wet weather means mostly rainwater, non-sanitary flows.
Right, okay.
So thanks, Commissioner Saltzman.
We wish every presentation was that succinct.
Indeed, so. And also that every project, which the series we've been having from the Bureau of Environmental Services have been very well done. They're for huge amounts of money, which were currently in the budget. So we're putting people to work, getting these things done, and putting this out for contract. And I was especially just pleased to see that it's at the optimal level of confidence of the cost. So we're pretty sure that that's the price we're going to pay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So this is a non-emergency. So moves to a second reading. Okay. That gets us to regular agenda item number 131. Could you please announce it?
Did you want to do the 11 o'clock time certain?
I'm sorry. Let's do the 11 o'clock time certain.
Okay. Andrew, did you want me to read both of these? Okay. Item 116, create a local improvement district to construct water main improvements to serve properties located on Northeast Gertz Circle and Northeast Gertz Court in the Deltawood Phase 1 local improvement district. Item 117, create a local improvement district to construct sanitary sewer improvements to serve properties located on Northeast Gertz Circle and Northeast Gertz Court in the Deltawood Phase 2 local improvement district.
Thank you, Carla. I have a dog up here on my computer screen. Can we switch that over to the... Good morning, Mayor Adams and commissioners. I'm Andrew Abbey, Local Improvement District Administrator. I have with me today Matt Hickey from the Bureau of Environmental Services and Cindy Dietz from the Portland Water Bureau. They will be happy to answer any questions you have about these projects. These two projects are a continuation of what the previous council considered on December 17th, and that was the previous council. Commissioner Fritz, it's a privilege to have you consider this item. Let's go ahead and move through the presentation.
Just to give you an overview of where Deltawood is, Deltawood is north of the Columbia Slough and it's east of Interstate 5, and just wanted to give you a geographical overview of where Deltawood is. We received one remonstrance from the 42 accessible properties in both of the LIDs. The map for both LIDs is the same in terms of the boundary and the properties that are included. The owner of the property that remonstrated is the southernmost property. You can see shaded in orange there at the entrance to Deltawood, and the property owner again submitted a remonstrance against formation of both LIDs. None of the other property owners remonstrated. Just wanted to give you a financial overview. And Carla, I have some hard copies of the presentation if you want to pass them out while I'm going through this. Currently, the Deltawood Homeowners Association pays all of the water and sewer bills for the entire neighborhood. And recently, the Deltawood HOA increased their monthly dues by $80.10 a month. It's my understanding that $60 of that increase was related to back utility bills, and the other $20 a month was for repair of the existing private water and sewer systems that are failing. The city entered into a repayment agreement with the Deltawood Homeowners Association. It's a 24-month repayment plan, no interest. I'm pleased to report that the Deltawood HOA has made their first two of 24 payments and are on track to getting that back bill paid off. So what we have now is we have a water and sewer bill that's being split up 42 ways, and it's up to the HOA to collect all that from everybody. If they stay on track for repaying the back bill, they'll have that paid off in November 2010. The intent is not to assess either of these LIDs earlier than December 2010. So assuming that Deltawood stays on track to paying off the back bill, they would not then incur the financial obligation for the LID until after that back bill is paid off. Most importantly, when both LIDs are completed, each resident will have control over his or her own water and sewer bill, and the HOA won't be in a position of having to collect the money and divide it among everybody. So that's an important conservation ethic that we can now introduce to Deltawood. I kind of wanted to run through the cash flows a little bit. The Deltawood residents certainly know the value of a dollar. This was a difficult decision for them to move forward with the LID. The Bureau of Environmental Services is offering partial funding through the Party Line Sewer Program that Council approved last year. Most of the cost of both LIDs, the only exception to that being right-of-way acquisition, are capped by the Portland Water Bureau and by the Bureau of Environmental Services. Cost cap is something that we unfortunately cannot offer on most LIDs, but we're able to offer it to a Deltawood resident to give them some cost certainty. So if you look at the average monthly payment for both of these LIDs, for the water LID, it would be $91.68 a month if financed over 20 years based on current interest rates, which are subject to change. Similar figure for sewer is $60.03. You add those up, $151.71. Portland Water Bureau did an analysis. The water usage in Deltawood is higher than comparable properties. They estimate that through conservation, the likely per household savings would be $9.10 a month. So if you take the $151, back out the $9.10 a month, if the Deltawood HOA were to roll back the $80 a month increase for the back bill and the repair cost upon completion of the LIDs, in theory, the net cash flow out of pocket would be $62.51 to the property owners for both LIDs combined. So city staff have worked very, very hard to try to make these LIDs as affordable as possible for the property owners. And I just want to note there is some private plumbing work that's not included in this estimate. It's my understanding that the sanitary sewer comes in at the back door and that BES will likely be moving that to the front door. So I recap the remonstrances for you. I did want to bring Council's attention to a notification error. This is the first notification error that I've seen in my tenure with the city. There was a data entry error in the auditor's office where one of the digits of the property ID number was misentered. So the notice went to somebody in Gresham. Much to my surprise, the property owner in Gresham didn't call me up to ask why he was getting a bill for Deltawood. I was on parental leave when the notices went out, but I discovered the error when I came back and proofed the register that came from the auditor's office. I sent out a late notice to the correct property owner in Deltawood, and I sent a follow-up letter and made two phone calls. The property owner didn't return any of my phone calls. I did get a return receipt on February 6th, so I know she got a copy of the letter. We've been sending her correspondence for 2 years, so neither one of these projects should be a surprise to her. She did not remonstrate against the Deltawood Phase 2 LID, for which we did provide proper notice. Council has the full prerogative, if it so wishes, to continue this hearing or to delay the second reading. My recommendation is to move forward with the second reading next week. I know the residents are quite anxious to move ahead with getting their water and sewer systems repaired. So the recommendation again is to pass it to a second reading next week, approve both projects, and to move forward. Finally, I just wanted to note for your attention, there is some financial risk with these projects. Two of the 42 properties are currently in bank foreclosure, and I have notified the banks that we are planning to move forward with these LIDs, and that I have not heard anything from either one of them. And then I also just wanted to note that one of the things that I have to do as local improvement district administrator is to evaluate the financial feasibility, i.e. the ability of these properties to repay their obligations with the LID. If you combine the estimated assessments for both LIDs, the ratio of valuation to assessment is 6.7 to 1, which is substantially in excess of the minimum 2 to 1 ratio and the desired 3 to 1 ratio. Having said that, if there are any defaults on the LID payment, then that obligation would go with the responsible bureaus. So before I turn it over to property owner testimony, Mayor Adams, I do have emails from two property owners, and well, I understand that I have a third email from another property owner, and I'll make sure you get copies of that after today, but before the second reading. So here are the copies of the written testimony from two property owners. I'll let Carla pass those out. And last but not least, I just want to read you two quick things from Exhibit F that I think might help you in making a decision. Regarding the Phase 1 LID for water, I got an email on October 23rd, 2007 from Lorna, the Deltawood HOA president, who's with us today. She said, we have two areas with slow water leaks. Currently, the area by our Gertz Road entrance is broken through its repair tape for the second time and is now providing us with a lovely pool. We had the plumber out last week who let us know both leakages are beyond glue and tape. And then I also just wanted to read for your attention, or call to your attention, rather, for the Deltawood Phase 2 LID for sanitary sewer improvements. I got an email from BES on February 26, 2007. There was also a leak and overflow of sewage last week. So I think there is a real dire need to get these improvements constructed, and I recommend that council move forward with passage of both ordinances. Thank you.
Any questions for Andrew?
I have a question. I'm wondering about the price confidence level being low. Why? What's the reason for not being sure about how much it's going to cost?
One of the things that we changed with the LID process when we did some code changes in 2003 was to try to minimize the amount of upfront engineering that we did, because what we found was is that we were doing a lot of very expensive engineering to put together plans that would wind up on the shelf if the property owners didn't want to move forward with LIDs. So one of the trade-offs of that is that we go into it with a lot less confidence. I can tell you that in my tenure as LID administrator, with respect to street projects, I've never had to come back to anybody and ask them for more money than what we estimated in the beginning, because the other thing that we've done is we've built in a contingency to allow for unknowns, and that has been done on both of these projects. But even if, for sake of argument, the costs go up, there is a cost cap for most of the cost in the LID. So the Deltawood residents get the benefit of that. Obviously, that's a risk to the bureaus. But the other thing to keep in mind is we put these two LIDs together to offer maximum flexibility. They can move forward with water, they can move forward with sewer, both of them. It was pretty clear from the feedback that I got that the residents wanted to do both. So I would expect, just from my project management experience, that there should be the opportunity for real cost savings by moving forward on both of these LIDs together and maybe even constructing them at the same time. That's something for water and BES to figure out.
So if they, is a cost overrun and BES has said that they're going to cover that, does that come out of sewer rates from everybody else?
Yes.
Any other questions for Andrew? Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.
Your usual good presentation. Do we have people signed up to testify?
Yes, we have four people signed up. First three coming up are Ken Scoggins, Neil Ruckman, and Lorna Baxter.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the City Council.
Good afternoon. Thank you for seeing us.
Yeah. All you have to do is give us your first and last name, and there'll be 3 minutes counting down on that clock in front of you.
Well, actually, good afternoon, Commissioners and Mayor. My name is Ken Scoggins, and I am a relatively new resident to Delta Park. And I just wanted to show up here today to give my voice of support to Andrew and his entire staff and everybody, all the hard work that they have done over the last year and a half that I've been present there, and to encourage you to move swiftly on this to get us to the next phase. This is a small little community. We do appreciate you actually recognizing there are little pockets all over Portland. So we're not really just out there by ourselves, but we do appreciate your encouragement. We also know that in order to make the sustainability of our neighborhood, these are requirements in order for the long-term livable environment in which we would like to raise our families with. And so, again, all I wanted to say, again, is thank you very much for your time. And these guys have done a great job. And please accept accept it and move on.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Hi, my name's Neil Ruckman. I'm also a relatively new homeowner in this little neighborhood. And I got there at kind of a peak time when it was transitioning from mostly rentals to like first-time homeowners. Buyers and that sort of thing. It's a very modest neighborhood. And I moved in there even though I knew about the water issues, like a big back bill, which was basically built up because other people didn't take responsibility for the neighborhood and just let it climb. And here we are taking responsibility for that back bill and taking responsibility for the neighborhood. I mean, we're here. We're asking for this help. We can't afford it, but we can't afford not to either. You know, it is just that critical. I think because of the financial nature of the neighborhood, any inkling of having to spend more money is a big deterrent, and people react to that rather than thinking through the entire process and seeing the benefits down the road in the bigger picture. And that if they had, that we would have a higher compliance or approval from much more of the residents than we did get. The neighborhood has shifted. It used to be pretty crime and nuisance and drug-ridden, and I have seen very little of that since I've moved in there. So I just encourage you to approve this and get it rolling. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Hi.
Hi. I'm Lorna Baxter. I'm the president of the Deltawood HOA. And I appreciate you listening to us today on this project. And I'm not going to elaborate too much over what Andrew has said. He gave a lot of good information. Of course, we are mainly now homeowner-occupied in our area of the 42 homes. And our common area, which links us together, has been the water and sewer. We're all sharing one water meter. So we have that, and then we have a small parkland area that links us together. This, of course, requires that we have a management company that helps us to manage our finances and also helps in monitoring the need for repairs and things like that. Right now, our calls have come. They're more often in regards to the water and sewer pipes. They're cracking and breaking. It seems to all happen at the same time. I guess it's because of the frozen ground and cold winter, but they're all now talking all at once. And they had different types of wrappings and temporary type of fixes. So with this, I look at this situation, and of course, our costs are more than the average water bill. Right now, it's because of our deficit that we're all paying back. And I see that with the repairs that need to happen right away, that Without this project, without the LID project, the homeowners would all be strapped with a phenomenal bill. You folks would know more than the average homeowner in my area about the costs of such a situation. But we in no way could replace all of the sewer and water piping and be able to afford that. I imagine that most contractors want their money up front and wouldn't allow us a payment plan whatsoever. The City of Portland has been gracious in allowing us a forgivable amount on our deficit, and looking at the LID project and our payment plan, that's the most feasible way that I could see to be able to do this project. Yes, there are poor homeowners in the area, but as it stood right now, there'd be no way for them to be able to pay for this water and sewer bill as it stands and repair. What would happen is, with what I see linking with the LID project, is that the city water and sewer bureau have for low-income homeowners programs and plans to aid in that. And also with the LID project, the laying the pipes and all of that, they're giving us a time period to be able to pay this back. So I really appreciate the city's assistance and really hope that you will consider our plea.
Thank you very much for your testimony today.
Thank you so much for coming in and reminding us all that the city provides services to citizens and that often we do it as public-private partnerships, because I know this is going to be a burden for you to pay for this too, but it is improving your neighborhood, and thank you for coming down to talk to us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Who else signed up?
Kay Jan Sturtevant.
Hi, Kay. Welcome to City Council.
Thank you.
You only have to give us your first and last name, and you have 3 minutes.
Okay. My first name is actually Karen. I go by my middle name, J-Ann. Last name, Sturtevant. I would like to thank you guys for considering us for this also. This is, like's been said, it's a very small community of 42 homes sharing all one water meter. That means if one person has a home and, you know, there's a single person in that home, they're paying the same amount as somebody who's got a home that's got six people living in it, which is not fair to that single person at all. You know, the water bills greatly, you know, have a different amount of, you know, usage there, and, you know, it depends on if the home has a dishwasher or not, or, you know, all kinds of things are considered in that area. You know, we're striving at this point to do a lot of different changes. Since I've been there since June of 2005, we have gotten rid of a lot of drug usage. We've done a lot to clean up the area. As soon as I moved in, I was like immediately almost elected onto the board because of the fact that the person I bought my home from was the previous president of the board. And she had just kind of carried over for years just because nobody else wanted to be on it. At this point, we've established a full board. We've incorporated a neighborhood watch committee. You know, we've done a lot to try to get the area up. And like Neil had said, there's now it's predominantly a owner-occupied area where it used to be a big rental area. So there's a lot of people that are coming in and trying to get this area built up. Besides it being a low-income area, they're just trying to do something. This is an area where they can buy normally, but the water issue does create a big hardship on everybody. And at this point, I don't know how else we could, you know, get it managed down there. So thank you.
Congratulations on the success thus far.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hello. My name is Forrest Fessner, and I haven't even gotten a chance to move in yet. I've been doing some remodeling. I purchased a house and was finalized a few months ago, and it's kind of unfortunate that a lot of things, first-time homeowner, this little community was kind of like what I could afford on my own, and the only thing I knew about it was we had shared water and sewer. And so I'm like, well, okay, that's kind of strange, but, you know, and that's all I was told about it. And so after I sign my papers and move in, then I find out this big headache everyone's been going through. And so now I'm kind of this past water bill and everything, I go from what I thought I was going to be paying, all of a sudden all my bills are, you know, they're being, you know, they doubled before I even moved in because the past water. But I agree with them totally that we definitely need to have it all modernized, because just from what I've seen in 2 months, water's always running down the road when there hasn't been any rain. So I can tell that the bill is really big because of all the pipes that have been breaking. So a lot of water's been wasting. And my particular yard has a manhole in the back yard, and they were saying about the sewer overflowage, it flows right into my backyard. And it happened last week. And so I'm battling with lots of this stuff, and there's water under my house that I'm dealing with also right now. So I'm hoping that they could come in and hopefully not put us on the back burner and could really go ahead with this before the pipes continue to disintegrate on us. And I think it'll improve the whole neighborhood a lot. Because being another new homeowner, we're all wanting to fix it up and, you know, make it a nice community. So,
well, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Anyone else wishes to testify? Any other discussion from council?
This goes to second reading, right? Mm-hmm. So this goes just to vote next week. I was elected promising to provide basic services in all 95 neighborhoods. I'm now going to add, and those that are not part of a recognized neighborhood association, because this is a wonderful project, and you're all to be commended for working so hard on it. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. Moves to a second reading, both items, and that gets us, I believe, to 131.
Mm-hmm. Amend contract with CH2M Hill for the Regional Disaster Preparedness Coordination Assessment Report for the Urban Area Security Initiative 5-County Region.
Patty.
Good morning. Patty. Oh, is it morning?
Afternoon.
Good afternoon. Patty Reuter, Portland Office of Emergency Management. I'm just here to answer questions. We have found by going through our first part of the contract that there were a lot of questions still left to be attended to on this 5-County regional coordination project. The outcome of this research and coordination would be to be able to plan together, to be able to have a better understanding of what everyone is doing, and to be able to have a structure in place that states how everyone works together from all of the counties. So we have found the money in our 2006 UASI grant, and we are at $110,525 and are wanting to move forward with more detail in the development of this project. So that's what the amendment is about.
And the emergency is necessary because?
Because we need to keep going on the process, and we have our contractor already starting to work, and they need to be able to continue without delay.
So when will this project be complete?
May.
Yes, slated to be completed in May.
It's grant funded.
Yeah, the money, so it's $110,000, and it's already in a grant, right? It comes from the federal government?
Right. Urban Area Security Initiative incorporates 5 counties, Columbia, Clark, Clackamas, Washington, and Multnomah, and the city of Portland. And we are trying to make sure that Portland is not an island, that we work in conjunction with all of the counties so that we help them, they help us in any kind of disaster, and that we have incorporated all of our capabilities.
Any other discussion from council? Anyone signed up to testify?
I did not have a sign-up
sheet. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify on item number 131? Unless there's further discussion, Carla, will you call the roll?
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye.
Thank you.
Great job.
Thank you, Patty. Item 132.
Ratify a letter of agreement with AFSCME Local 75 with AsME Council 75 Local 189-2 to authorize an additional work schedule.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Jarrell Gaddis. I'm with the Bureau of Human Resources, and I'm representing BOAC, Bureau of Emergency Communication. The ordinance is for an additional work schedule for the dispatchers. Let me provide you with some background on this work schedule. This is a work schedule that was derived from the last negotiations in 2006, in which a committee was created. That committee was called the Recruitment and Retention Committee. A part of that committee was to identify issues in recruitment and retention. A part of that committee, what they did was they looked at how can we maintain the current staff and recruit. And so what they found is we only had three different shifts in which employees had to choose for them. So the committee got together and thought, let's add an additional shift. And that shift is what they call now a 2-2-3. This shift creates a more work-life balance, and right now it's been in use for, I think, a year. This is something that Commissioner Leonard supported, along with the director, Lisa Turley.
Any questions from council?
So these shifts are 11 and a half hour shifts and then some time off.
That is correct.
It's regular pay for the 11 and a half hours.
That is correct.
I have a question about the difference in estimation of the Office of Management and Finance thinks that there isn't an additional financial impact, and the emergency communications think that there is because of overtime.
Yes, that's interesting. The OMF looked at it as as no increase. The Bureau of Communication looked at it as an increase, and so what I wanted to do is make sure that both sides of the issues was presented.
Well,
what's the answer?
Oh, the answer is yes, there is. There
is.
We're looking, yes. The
14.
Financial impact can be up to $14,500, yes.
Per year?
Yes, per year.
In additional overtime?
Yes.
Other council discussion? Thank you. Is there anyone that would like to testify on item 132?
No one signed up.
All right, it is an emergency. Please call the roll.
Fritz?
Well, it may increase overtime, and we're going to have a discussion about overtime in emergency communications and prioritization. So in the meantime, I recognize this is a lot of good work that's been done with good negotiations, so I vote aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye.
Thank you all.
Item 133, this is to allow in the Bureau of Transportation the inclement weather team that we required to postpone their scheduled vacation and holiday leaves, and for those that have a maximum of 2 years and therefore cannot carry over any of the excess of 2 years, to allow one-time dispensation for a specific group of people for which we required to work through the storm and their otherwise scheduled holidays. How's that for, is that all right?
That's excellent, Mayor.
Second.
Okay, good. No.
I like how you're thinking.
It's lunch.
All right, are there any questions of our esteemed staff from the City Council?
We voted on a similar thing recently, so we all understand why.
Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify on item number 133? Carla, will you please call the roll?
Fritz?
Thank you for sitting here patiently all morning for us to say thank you. We don't need any more information. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Nice work, Commissioner Fish. Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Item 134, second reading and vote only.
Create a new non-represented classification of Sustainable Stormwater Division Manager.
Please call the roll.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Item 135, second reading, vote only.
Add definition of cable communications utility.
Please Please call the roll.
Fritz?
Despite the late hour, I'm going to reiterate why this is really a wonderful thing, that it's going to bring at least $600,000 of additional revenue every year, thanks to the great work of our staff, including Director David Olson, who's over here in the Office of Cable Communications and Franchise Management. And it was an amicable settlement that avoided litigation and had the support of our community partners, Comcast. So I vote yes.
Fish?
Well, I have a lengthy speech I'd like to read that I have cleared with Commissioner Fritz, but I will dispense with it and congratulate her. One of her first initiatives on the council is to bring new revenue to our work. Please to vote aye.
Saltzman. Please to vote support this, but I also want to acknowledge Ben Walters, who I'm sure had a hand in this, as well as David Olson. So good work, everybody. Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
Good work, Commissioner Fish and team. Aye. We are adjourned till 2 p.m. when we have the Safety Recognition Day Awards.
Okay. Let's do that.
Okay.